Community Matters, solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from The Morning Show on Your Encouraging WPER. I am happy to share with you another edition of Community Matters. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about a couple different things today, a couple different topics that focus on finances in your life and how they can impact you, but also how you can maybe get involved in the freelance economy, the gig economy that is starting to boom pretty big. And then finally, we'll be closing out with a little bit about grocery shopping habits, actually, which is kind of interesting to see how the pandemic has shifted the way Americans shop for groceries. And you may even find a little bit of your own behaviors woven into that program, too. So to kick us off, we're going to start with our first interview. This is with Dr. Elizabeth Dunn. She holds a BA in psychology from Harvard University and a PhD and MA in psychology from the University of Virginia. She conducts experimental research examining how time, money, and technology shape human happiness. She's the chief science officer for Happy Money. She's a TED speaker and co-author of Happy Money, The New Science of Happier Spending. So specifically, she'll be speaking about what impact your finances can have on your mental health. So without further ado, we'll launch into today's interviews. Well, Dr. Elizabeth Dunn, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to have the chance to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I understand Mental Health Awareness Month. I mean, that's something that speaks to a lot of people. And I'm curious, when we say mental health in general, is there something of an overview that you could provide that just, you know, kind of explains what we're talking about, what we're specifically addressing? Because mental health, it can be such a wide range of things.
Certainly. Mental health is indeed quite a broad term. And often when people think about mental health, they think about mental health problems, anxiety, distress, and depression, for example. And those are certainly very important components of mental health. But it's also important to think about the sort of more positive side of the equation too, which is kind of flourishing. So are people experiencing, you know, joy and contentment on a typical day? Do they feel satisfied with their lives? And at Happy Money, we take a very broad approach to thinking about mental health as encompassing, you know, not only the mental health challenges that we face, but also about, you know, really promoting people's best selves and best lives. It's all part of this concept of mental health.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I understand when we're talking about mental health, one of the things that can have a great impact on that would be financial wellness. So is there something that you could say just in regards to Happy Money? What are some things that you guys are focusing on to have people more aware of where how their financial wellness plays into their mental health?
Absolutely. So as the chief science officer at Happy Money, I really focus on how we can help people have a happier relationship with money by both getting out of debt and building up their savings, as well as just sort of changing their approach to the way they think about money. And, you know, when people start to dig into this, the first piece of advice that I tend to offer is to think about how can we eliminate high interest credit card debt. So Happy Money has found that people with no credit card debt experience nearly 40% less financial stress compared to people with revolving debt. So for that reason, we've developed the payoff loan, which is intended to help people escape that revolving door of debt, which we know, again, is just so destructive for mental health.
Amazing. Thank you. When we talk about something like paying yourself first, what does that even mean? I've heard that concept before, but I'm not sure how to wrap my head around what that means.
Yeah, so I think of paying yourself as being about investing in your future self. So this can look like, putting extra cash into savings and long-term investments as soon as you get paid instead of just kind of satisfying those immediate wants or needs. And our science team recently conducted a study on delaying gratification. And what we found was that people who really prioritized the future reported lower financial stress and better financial self-efficacy compared to people who are more focused on instant gratification. So essentially delaying gratification and investing in your future self by saving, for example, instead of more impulsive spending, seems to be a pretty key factor in deriving more happiness from your finances. I'd also add that investing in yourself can mean making purchasing decisions that give you some time back. So, you know, paying for like a couple hours of daycare or subscribing to a meal delivery service can help you buy yourself some time.
So we've covered the concept of paying yourself first, investing in your future self. We've also talked about paying down your credit card debt and what an immediate impact that can have on just your, you know, financial wellness overall and how that can impact your mental health. What other pieces of advice would you offer for those who are facing a financial hardship?
Well, you know, one strategy when you're facing financial hardship is to really think about how exactly you're spending money. So my big piece of advice would be to track what you spend and how it makes you feel so you can decide what's actually worth it to you and also what's not. So pay attention to how purchases affect your mood in order to identify your happy and sad spends. And by understanding how your own money choices are impacting your mental and emotional well-being, you can start to shift your spending toward what makes you truly happy. And this might include paying down debt, for example, or just savoring a very small treat. Sometimes just spending a few dollars on something that you love can give you a real boost. You might also think about investing in experience or helping another person. And this mindfulness approach can help you get more joy from your happy spends and help you also cut back on spending in some of the areas where perhaps you're, you know, racking up some debt and not getting all that much joy from it.
So happy spends, you would include something like giving back to the community, helping others, that would kind of be included under that umbrella?
Absolutely. So, you know, we see that giving back offers a real mood boost. And you know, over a decade of research indicates that you're more likely to derive happiness from spending money on somebody else than spending it on yourself. But with that said, you know, happiness is an individual matter. And so different types of spending are going to make different people, you know, respond differently. And so at Happy Money, we're all about sort of recognizing each person as an individual, meeting them where they are, and helping them identify the types of purchases that are really going to be satisfying or unsatisfying for them.
I'm curious, over the last year or so, how have you seen the pandemic kind of shift things in terms of financial wellness and mental health overall related to finances?
Yeah, so the pandemic has certainly created numerous challenges. And, you know, I would say that, you know, for many people, I think a huge challenge the pandemic has created is just building up this debt that can be a source of shame for some people because, you know, it's maybe they had really good control over their finances and then the pandemic hit and they lost control. And I would suggest that, you know, often the hardest step we can take on any health journey is this very first and most important one, which is just reaching out for help. So talking about money and debt can actually feel very freeing. And we encourage people who come to us at Happy Money to prioritize their financial, emotional, mental health in just the same way that they would tend to their physical health. So, you know, one thing that I really recommend to people is just starting with some small, manageable changes and also celebrating these little milestones that occur along your financial journey. So take those big goals that you might have, like getting out of debt, break it into bite-sized pieces because these small steps are easier to form into habits that stick. And that's the sort of psychology-based approach that we apply at Happy Money to help people get out of this revolving door of debt.
Can I ask just for an example or two of what some of those smaller steps might be considered?
Yeah, so you could start with little changes like saving $10 a week to achieve one of your goals or perhaps giving $15 to a charitable organization that could use the support right now, or perhaps putting an extra $50 a month toward your credit card debt. And at Happy Money, what we do is really help people work to figure out where they can put even small amounts of money that are going to make the biggest difference, not only for their bottom line, but for their own happiness and mental health.
Beautiful. Thank you. I know one thing that a lot of people run into is, you know, they feel like they're doing good. And then something will come along, whether it's a car repair or something with the house. And then all of a sudden, they're stuck right back into this position of having to play catch up. Any suggestions that you would have for someone to avoid getting stuck in that position?
Yeah, it's such a challenge. I mean, one thing that we find is that if people can build up even a small amount of emergency savings, that can make a really big difference. So our research at Happy Money shows that people with just $400 in emergency savings report over 13% higher levels of life satisfaction than those who don't have that cushion. So it just goes to show how starting small can have a big impact on your overall happiness. I would also say that as well as sort of conquering those financial challenges, we have to think about the emotional challenges that come along with them. And on that note, last year we introduced a new stress reduction program called PEACE. And this is a free course that uses cognitive behavioral therapy and some key findings from psychology to help people just understand and reduce the impact that financial stress is having on their lives.
Amazing. Thank you. I know that our time is just about up, but is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that you did not get a chance to address yet in this time?
Well, I would just encourage people, if they want to learn more, to go to happymoney.com/peace. And at this site, they can start to take a more personalized look at their own attitudes toward money. And we can start to help get people onto a better financial journey as we move out of this pandemic year.
Beautiful. Well, Dr. Dunn, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us again today. This is all fantastic information, something that we can all make use of.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing this with your listeners.
For our next interview today, we're going to be staying with the financial situation, how finance impacts all of our lives, but specifically looking at the gig economy. We're speaking once again with Brent Messenger. He's the Vice President of Public Policy and Community Engagement with Fiverr. And Fiverr's mission is to change how the world works together. And if you're not familiar with their service, essentially they are an online platform that connects businesses of all sizes with skilled freelancers offering digital services in more than 500 categories. And specifically, we're going to be speaking about how small business owners in our community could benefit from taking advantage of the gig economy, but also for those who are maybe having trouble with job placement in the local area, how something like freelance work could help you bridge the gap in your own financial situation. Brent, thank you for joining the show today. I'm really excited to have another chance to talk with you about the role that freelance is playing in our current economy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
What sort of things have you been noticing over the past, I want to say year and a half, really, as we've been kind of dealing with this pandemic? What are some trends that you've seen in terms of freelance kind of taking a bigger role?
Yeah, well, so this is the fourth time we've done this report. And, you know, I'm always amazed by the growth in both the population and the revenue that people are generating. This year, we looked at 30 top cities and found that 6.1 million freelancers generated $154 billion in revenue. So it's really getting big, and I think it's something that people are starting to take notice of.
Do you think that this is something that was like an inevitable thing that was going to happen that maybe was just accelerated because of the pandemic? Or do you think that this was really created by a need to have some outsourced help?
You know, I think it's exactly what you said. It's that this was, you know, this has been growing. Like I said, this is the fourth year we've done this, and we've seen growth each year. The pandemic certainly accelerated it. What was great about it, you know, for freelancers that were set up for this when the pandemic started is that they were able to keep working. In fact, most said that they earned as much in 2020 as they earned in 2019. So they didn't even see a downturn that unfortunately a lot of people saw across the economy. But they're super optimistic too about 2021. They think they're going to earn, about 80% of them surveyed said they think they'll earn more in 2021 than in 2020. So we have seen growth in the population and again in the revenue, and it just keeps going up.
I would like to kind of camp there for just a bit, because I know for our listeners, one of the big concerns that we're still facing is, you know, the job market in general, finding available opportunities for people or others just struggling to get a foothold in the workplace. So in regards to those trying to get a foot in the door, how are the waters? Like, I don't know how else to put that, but like, how hard is it to try to start a freelance opportunity?
You know, there are lots of platforms for it now. I think the platforms, there are more than there were probably last time we talked. And I think that the idea of freelancing is a lot better, but it's, you know, or a lot, I should say a lot more well-known, but it's not just knowing about the opportunities. There are things that actually I think have been driving the growth of freelancing in various geographies. And one of them is high-speed internet access. Mm. About 92% of the people that we surveyed in this report said that they wanted to go to or had gone to places where there was great infrastructure. So it's really important for people to take a look at whether or not the community they live in or where their home is set up for great high-speed internet, because that is going to be one of the things that makes this possible. So knowing about the opportunity is part of the challenge, but also making sure that the infrastructure is good and you're in a place that's supportive, that's really important as well.
Looking at it from the other perspective then, from the employer's perspective, we do have a lot of small business owners who listen to and actually support our radio station. For them, I would imagine in an economy, if it's difficult to keep employees on staff, how can freelancing or, you know, participating in the gig economy help them with their bottom line?
You know, that is one of the things we saw almost immediately in the pandemic was businesses turning to freelancers to survive. And really early on in the pandemic, the shift was from offline to online. So you had independent businesses brick and mortar businesses, small mom and pop shops, some restaurants, some boutiques, a wide range of different types of businesses that suddenly woke up in lockdown and said, gee, I've only been doing business in my store. How do I get this thing online? And they were able to turn to the freelance marketplaces and quickly find people with expertise in building online shops, building out social media campaigns, doing advertising on social media and things like that. So for small businesses, freelancing was actually really a lifeline in the pandemic. And that kind of bears out in our report as well. Many, many small businesses relied on freelancers during the pandemic.
And I know that the report looked at some top cities for skilled freelance workers. Our station is based just outside of the Northern Virginia area. So do you have anything that you can share about where sort of the Washington, D.C. area and suburbs surrounding it would rank?
Yeah, well, by the size of the workforce, Washington, D.C. area is top five. The top five are New York, Los Angeles, Miami, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. So, and then, D.C. is, like I said, has generated $8 billion in revenue, which is incredible. And the population of freelancers that are doing this is about 174,000 people. So a relatively small number of people generating a huge amount of income. And again, across those three sort of buckets, the biggest one is the professional services. But, creative work still generated $660 million as well in the Washington, D.C. area.
What do you think the future holds for the freelance market, both from the freelancer's perspective and the employer's perspective?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, I anticipate more growth. I think we don't really even know how much of the workforce could become freelance. I think as these freelance marketplaces become easier to use and people become more accustomed to it, we're really going to be looking at some interesting changes in the country. Even now, we're starting to see migrations, a lot of people leaving colder weather climates. One of the things that we noted in this year's impact report was that Miami was overtaking Chicago as number three market for freelancing in the country. And that really is indicative of a shift for people, realizing that they no longer have to live and work in the same place that they always have. That as long as they have, their freelance opportunities, their laptop, their broadband access, they can be anywhere they want.
For those who are interested in finding out more about either becoming a freelancer or outsourcing to freelancers, where can they go for more information?
Yeah, so to learn about becoming a freelancer or buying freelance services, they can go to Fiverr.com. That's Fiverr.com. And if they're interested in this impact report, it's at Fiverr.com/freelance-impact.
And then in terms of the financial implications, any tax things that they need to be aware of, would you recommend any government-based websites, IRS.gov, anything like that, where they could find just some tips and information for what the personal financial responsibility is in joining the gig economy?
Great advice. I think that's really important, and that is exactly where you want to go looking for that. Once you start earning some income as a freelancer, you definitely want to be aware of the tax implications.
Awesome. Well, Brent, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. I think that this is valuable info for our listeners, just knowing what opportunities are out there and how they can get on board.
Thanks so much for having me.
For our final interview this morning, we're still sort of tangentially staying connected to finances in our lives, but we're turning to shopping for groceries. Specifically, how the pandemic shaped the way Americans shop for groceries. You may even see some of the trends that you and your family have been taking. You may even see your own family in some of the trends that they've been finding. And it may even give you some ideas on things that you want to shift in your own family to sort of curb your spending habits at the grocery store or change how you shop. We are speaking today with Leslie Sarasin. She's the president and chief executive officer of FMI, the Food Industry Association. She champions the food industry and the issues that make a difference to its members' fundamental mission of feeding and enriching society. She will be discussing the latest U.S. Grocery Shopper Trends report, which shows the food shopping habits have been drastically different now as a result of the pandemic that they were before the pandemic. So without further ado, here is our interview with Leslie Sarasin. Leslie, thank you so much for joining the program. I'm excited to have the chance to talk with you today.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I know that just the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, it has changed so much about the way that we live. Like literally, I don't think there's a single aspect of our lives that has not been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. But I'm curious, just from your expertise, the things that you have been studying and that you have found, how specifically, like what trends are we seeing in grocery shopping based on the report that you've just completed?
Well, I think what the report has shown us is that grocery shopping has fundamentally changed in the course of the past year. And in three major ways. First of all, we have developed a much deeper relationship with our kitchens. Many of us didn't cook much before the pandemic, but have been reminded that we do know how to cook. Or if we didn't cook before, we've learned how to cook over the course of the past year. Our study shows that 58% are eating more at home and 49% are cooking and prepping their own meals. So that's a big shift. The second is that we've learned new ways to shop. We're doing much more of shopping with a stock-up mentality, shopping less frequently, but buying more things for the longer haul than we have historically. And we're also much more developed in our online shopping skills. In fact, 64% of us are shopping online now, and that's a huge jump because prior to the pandemic, we were at about 50%. And then the third big way I think we've changed is our personal concept of well-being has affected our shopping. So we're paying much more attention to the healthfulness and the nutrition quality of the products we're serving ourselves and our families. And this notion of health and well-being is something that I think will stick with us for a while.
So I'd love to camp just on the first point that you touched on, that more people are cooking at home. Do you find, or has the report shown, that this is leading to maybe healthier meals because you're preparing things yourself? You can focus on what ingredients that you're using. Even just curious, is there any point to more organic produce being purchased? What are you seeing in terms of healthy eating trends cooking at home?
Well, what we've seen is that the study showed that about half of the people surveyed are putting much more effort into nutritious and healthy food selections, and therefore the meals that they are serving for their families. When asked, we had an increase of about 14% of people who indicated they believe their diet is healthy enough or as healthy as possible. So that's a big increase in just a year's time. So I think that we are we're much more focused on health. The research also shows that nearly half of consumers believe that their grocery store is an ally to them in helping with them reach their health goals. And I think the other thing that has come through in this relates to family meals. The notion of well-being and comfort that comes from having meals at home with our families around our own tables is something that I think we have just rediscovered during the pandemic, and it's something that will stick with us for a long time to come.
Which I love that trend. I think that that's amazing. Like, you know, there's less on the go, so there's more of an opportunity to sit down and enjoy a meal together. So it's great.
No question. It is an important part of who we are as citizens in this country.
Absolutely. Can I ask then, I know that you mentioned that online shopping has risen dramatically, and I have to say that that's how it is in my family too. My husband and I used to love lengthy late evening trips to the grocery store when it was nice and calm and quiet. Now we maybe go inside a grocery store once a month, and it's because it's the one that we can't do a curbside pickup. Outside of that, everything we do is entirely online. So I'm just curious, in terms of the online shopping, do you anticipate that that trend will be something that continues beyond the pandemic?
I do anticipate that it will. And I will tell you that you are not alone in your increased online shopping. We know from our research that we went from about 50% of shoppers to up to 64% of shoppers doing most of their shopping online. And also the frequency with which they shop online is up. In that about 25% are ordering at least weekly online. So I think this is something that will stay with us for a while. The demographics we see that have sort of led the way in online shopping tend to be the future shoppers, the millennials, Gen Xers, and Gen Zers. And, you know, as the future of the shopping population, the ease and the comfort that they have with shopping online indicates to me, at least, that this is something we can anticipate for the foreseeable future.
I feel like for me, like, I was hesitant to do online shopping before just because the price was a little bit higher. And then, of course, I shifted to it just because of the safety factor. But now I feel I'm going to keep it just because the convenience factor. I mean, maybe paying a little bit more, but the time that I'm saving not going inside the store is crazy awesome.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. And I agree with you. You know, I was one of those shoppers who always thought no one could pick my tomatoes for me but me. and what I learned during the pandemic is that the shoppers in the stores do a perfectly fine job of selecting my tomatoes. So I think of myself as a little bit of a grocery nerd. And I like to go in the store, and I will continue to do so because I think it's interesting. And, of course, for what I do for a living, it's important for me to see what's new and different. But this notion of online shopping is not going away for me and certainly not for many other Americans.
In regards to trends continuing post-pandemic, do you believe that this trend of also cooking home more will keep? Or do you think that people are going to be just so excited to get out to restaurants again that they're going to really shift back into eating out?
You know, I think at the beginning, beginning sort of now, I think a lot of us will go out to restaurants because of the novelty of being able to go out again. So I think we will see that growth right off the bat. But I think as time goes on, what we're going to see is that we will settle back into eating at home more. Nearly half of our respondents say that they're going to continue to cook at home. And they refer to the convenience factor of eating at home, the economics of eating at home. You know, we all, I think, are aware that it's more economical to eat at home than it is to eat out. And then, of course, this notion of health and well-being, being able to control what we're serving ourselves and our families, really, I think, supports this need we feel to be healthier in how we consume food products. So I think for all of those factors and probably a lot of others, we will remain an eating at home community.
Which I like that. I do think that it really, I feel like it's just that iconic picture of the family eating around the table, sharing about their day. I feel like some of that has gotten lost in our busy society, and it took a pandemic to bring some of that back. And I'm really looking forward to having that be a part of our routine again.
I couldn't agree with you more, Megan. And you know, the research shows that there are social benefits to having more family meals. Our children do better in school. They're able to avoid some of the less desirable temptations that teenagers are exposed to. There's something about being at the table and sitting across from your family members and talking about your day that really changes the dynamic of how we function in society. And that's important.
For listeners who are interested in learning more about the report and results that it shows, where can they find out more?
Well, they can go directly to our website, and that's fmi.org/grocery trends, and they'll be able to take a look at a lot of the details and can even download the report if they'd like to.
Leslie, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I really do appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Megan.
And that concludes another edition of Community Matters. Thank you once again for hanging with us today. And of course, if you'd like to hear audio from any of these interviews again, you can do so right on our website, wper.org. Have a great day.